So, hi. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Brookers, and I'm an internet celebrity. For those of you who do know me, and you know exactly who you are, don't deny it.
This is Brooke Brodak, the world's first ever YouTube star. It was 2005, and the website YouTube was barely a year old when a new channel appeared called Brookers.
Someone please help me.
It featured a hyperactive 19-year-old from Holden, Massachusetts, who filmed herself in her room, around the house, just doing silly stuff. But she caught on fast, and her channel quickly started getting thousands of subscribers and millions of views. And at one point, she reached the very top, the most subscribed YouTuber in the world, with 60,000 subscribers.
You just started putting your videos on YouTube, and then what happened?
Now back then, this was huge, and less than a year after she started uploading videos, NBC offered her a development deal. The New York Times called her YouTube's first star. She moved to Hollywood, where she lived with another emerging YouTuber, iJustine.
Hi, I'm Justine.
Things were going great until she deleted her channel and all social media and moved to India. A few years later, she reappeared with a new channel on YouTube and a very different type of Brooke.
Now let's talk about YouTube, the YouTube conversation.
Woo, let's go. Now we have to cross the highway.
I now understand what it is really about. Beautiful people, beautiful problems, and the promotion of that.
Now, for this podcast, Brooke tells her story in detail for the first time, in her own words, about her rise to YouTube stardom.
I was just totally blinded by my passion at that time for creating videos.
And why she threw it all away to pursue something greater.
Bam, like 2012, and I had this totally out of nowhere spiritual experience, like an enlightening moment.
And what her views are now on Hollywood and social media.
And YouTube is about you sharing your own dream, at least getting out of Hollywood's dream and discovering what is your dream that you're projecting on the screen.
So what's it like being an internet celebrity? I don't really know.
This is the Cullum Flynn Podcast, and my guest today is Brooke Brodak.
Recording in progress.
Recording in progress. You heard what the lady said, Brooke.
Yes, she did. She said, recording in progress.
Brooke, yeah. You look great. How are you feeling?
Thank you. I feel great.
Do you remember starting on YouTube, like how you discovered it or how you started to experiment with this crazy website? And what did you make of it? Like, did you know what this thing was?
Yeah, you know, I had an intuition that there was better tech out there because I was frustrated wanting to upload videos, you know, but not wanting to own a website, a domain, or submit it to like eBombs World. And so I just set out on a search, and I think a few hours or a day later, I found YouTube, and I was like, yes, I'm spot on. The technology is out there. Like, I'm totally tuned in with what's going on. And the best part was, I was one of the first people, like one of the first few hundred people to be there. So that was really cool.
Isn't that crazy? Because I know when we think about YouTube today, just the pure saturation of content. I remember reading, and I think it's a few years old, the statistics, so I'm sure it'll be more now, but it was that every second, 48 hours of content is uploaded to YouTube. Every second,
amazing.
2 days back-to-back of videos are uploaded. But this was back in when YouTube was in its infancy, and the kind of, like, what kind of place was it? What were the kind of videos being shared? Like, what was YouTube like back then?
There wasn't much of a selection, and there was a lot of people like me just experimenting with Windows Movie Maker or Adobe video editing, or, you know, a lot of pixels. a lot of low lighting. And I don't think, yeah, there was no big brands on there or anything like that. It was all what I like to say, organic.
I've seen your videos now. You use that word a lot, organic. Back then it really was organic, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It's the roots. It was the roots that you were looking at of what it would become.
It's crazy to think now that people, they've built a whole industry and a whole business out of viral and going viral, and their production houses who have young YouTubers in, and all they want to do is just have clickbait, viral videos, because that equals revenue and advertising revenue. So there's a business and there's like a science to going viral. The kind of video, the length of video, the way it's cut, the thumbnail. Whereas back then, had you heard the word viral before? Did that word even exist?
No. And even just sharing before they coined the term viral was something that took me by surprise the first few people, when I noticed that YouTube had a sharing feature, when I started to get notifications on my email that my videos were being shared. And my initial reaction was very old school. Oh no, they can't share my content. But then I came to realize, well, that's just a part of how it works, and that's what it's all about.
And okay, so for people who are not familiar with you, Brooke, just kind of like the 101, the Brooke, the YouTube channel, what it was called, and the kinds of videos you would upload and what you would do, your character.
So I was working at the 99 restaurant at the time. That was my part-time job. I was in high school, and shooting video had always been my hobby. Since I was like 10 years old, my first video camera was an analog, and I used to shoot with that. And I think at the time, I think I was also in college. I was studying broadcasting and telecommunications. And I took some money from my job, like $200, $300. And on Black Friday, I stood in line and I bought my first camera for a while, like my first digital camera with a flip out screen. And I would just go to the park, like in my spare time, and just shoot stuff or shoot stuff with my sister. And it felt really good to get back in touch with that younger side of myself who always had this hobby. You know, I loved shooting videos. I used to shoot my family. And then I would like bring them into the living room right after like holidays, like on Thanksgiving, like 5 hours later, and make them watch what they just did, you know. And they're like, no, come on. Why do we want to see this? But they would always laugh and be like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. And I would bring them a lot of awareness, you know, of how they are and how they should perceive themselves. So that's how I got started. And yeah, I used to edit in, I think it was Adobe. And I taught myself how to do that because I had a passion for it. And my passion for things really used to drive me, like, to do incredible things. Like, just self-teach myself whatever I wanted to know.
And you used to start out, you said you started on analog cameras. I remember them myself, going around with like a VHS-C camera, 8mm. And then the progression to digital is like, it's a bit like, when it goes from black and white to color, it's just like a whole new world. It's like, wow, I can shoot and edit in digital on Movie Maker or Pinnacle. Like, this is stop the world. This is amazing.
Well, yeah, for me, the biggest thing was not having to review my movies on the flip out screen or have to plug it into the television, but to upload it into the computer and edit it. I used to edit it in the camera by deleting bits on the tape and re-recording over it.
Whoa. That's a lot of work.
At like 10 or 11 years old, yeah.
You were 10 or 11, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And then what age were you when you started putting videos up on YouTube, your kind of comedy bits?
I think I was like 18, 19, around that age.
And am I right to call them comedy bits, or what would you call them? Like, describe the kind of videos you would upload.
I think they were comedy, but I think I was trying to touch on something deeper. I can see that looking back, because I made this one video, a comedy video, joking about a vacation I took at Christmas in the Himalayas, And that actually happened like in 2020. And a lot of things like that. I made another video joking about how I would be on Tyra Banks' show. You know Tyra Banks?
Yeah.
She's an American model and I think singer. I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, model definitely. And I ended up on her show as well. So it was always funny, but it always was like there was something deeper there. You know, there was something.
So it
was.
But
yeah, it was comedy. It was comedy. Long story short, it was comedy.
But it wasn't like, yeah, I understand what you're saying. It wasn't completely nonsensical. Yeah, there was like a youthfulness to it and a naivety. And, you know, you're just trying to figure out the platform. And but I wonder, will this work?
And have fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And but the crazy thing is, like, so you're not putting too much thought into the production. You're just kind of doing these fun videos and then you're putting them up and you notice then they started to get a lot of views. Like you were getting views from people all over the world.
Yeah, I think I'd figured something out. You know, like my most popular video was a video, the Numa video, the crazed Numa fan. And in that video, I think I was telling people like not to share it and not to be a fan. And of course the opposite happened. And I've been trying to understand this phenomena in the States for quite a while, why people seem to want to do things you tell them not to do. And and so yeah, that's what happened. Like I posted that video and I told people like don't like it, and of course they did, right? And the music was great. That was always another thing. Like I used Dragonstar Dinte, this band, and I don't know where they're from, but I can't remember now. But it was, yeah, it was like a very like electronic kind of track, and it was really poppy. And
oh,
you know,
is
I
this
used a lot of colors.
Numa Numa, Numa Numa,
yes.
Numa, da, da, da. Yeah. And the reason,
yeah, da, 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 this thing, yeah.
But I remember them. I tried to interview that guy a few years ago. We did a show for the BBC.
Gary Brawlsma.
That's him. Yeah.
Brawlsma.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
So you saw him and you copied him.
I did, and we actually communicated at some point because he went on to do something bigger. I think he did like the Grand Numa, or seriously, something like that. I don't remember, but we were in touch briefly for a while.
He's living in New Jersey now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And cool. I think, he, if I'm not mistaken, he went, because two years ago, we did the show for the BBC, Life After Viral, where we went and we tracked down some of the internet's original viral stars from like 10 years ago. And he was one of them. And yeah, just how the psychology of dealing with viral fame. That's amazing.
So I forget it now. I forget what it is. I can't even remember.
You can't,
it's crazy. I'd love to sing it, but I forgot it.
You had over 8 million views for that video and you can't even sing the song now.
No.
Isn't that crazy?
No, I can't.
But was that the video that catapulted you then into becoming the most subscribed YouTuber in the world?
I think it was that one. And there was another one where I was lip syncing to, I can't remember the movie. Some of my fans are going to be reeling if they listen to this. They're going to be like, what? I was wearing a Coca-Cola t-shirt and I had a Japanese sword, which I don't know how that relates to it at all. Lip syncing to some Broadway movie. I forget what it is now. Some Broadway movie. And that one was really popular. Then there was It's a Paste, where I pretended to be like a kid eating paste. And I put on a whole voice. So I was like, it's a paste. Like, oh my gosh. And yeah, there was a lot of them. Oh, they'll come back to me if I think about it. But, you know, they're not on the forefront of my mind now. I have so much to think about, and that takes up a lot of space.
And it's fascinating, but, because you then, Brooke, you became the most subscribed channel on YouTube. Now, you know, if you said that to a YouTuber today, they would sell their gran, cut off the right arm to be anywhere close the most subscribed in their region, mm-hmm. in their country. You were the most subscribed in the world in the early days of YouTube. And I know that the New York Times and many different publications were saying, like, you were the first internet YouTube celebrity. Well, I don't know what you call it. Yeah.
I think they use the word like homegrown viral or homegrown. Yeah, something like that. And it was Variety who released the first article, and I wasn't supposed to say anything about it, and I did. I created a video called Everything Changes, and I totally put the information out there. It was such a rebel before Variety released it, and NBC got upset with me. They're like, you're not supposed to talk about this. We told you not to talk about it. But I was out of control. I was like, I love what I'm doing, and I can't wait for them. I have to share it. And I basically, like, I don't know if I said it or if I said something's coming, but I think I did. I think I did say something because I remember getting reprimanded by NBC.
But before we get to NBC, did you know in the early days what was happening? Because now people know, wow, I'm getting more subscribers. I'm on the road to becoming a wealthy YouTuber. But back then there was no such thing as YouTuber. You were kind of trailblazing and leading the way. So did you know when you were 18, 19, getting thousands of subscribers, getting millions of views, did you know this was leading somewhere, or did you think this is just kind of a fun hobby that I don't understand what's going on here?
Well, you know, okay, I'll backtrack a bit. I wrote can you hear my baby yelling?
Well, that's okay. That's real. We can hear your little baba.
Oh, okay. This microphone picks up everything. I'm not sure how it works yet, really. So to backtrack quite a bit, I wrote an article when I was in high school on my MySpace saying, like, look, I'm going to make it big. You all should, like, get to know me now before it's too late. And they didn't. And too bad. So later on, I remember as YouTube started to grow and as my videos started to become popular and the views just started coming in, my article with Variety was the first article of that kind on YouTube's news page. I know that for sure. And I was like, whoa, this is big. And then, like, a lot of the people that I surrounded myself with, like Caitlin Hill and Boheem and all these other creators at the time, the first YouTubers who went on to become the first YouTube partners in the partner program, they all said in interviews and everything, like, yeah, Brooke was my inspiration. I saw her article on YouTube that she got signed with NBC, and they all just came flooding in to try to get that as well.
Wow. So this is what happened. Yeah. So NBC saw your videos and the success you were having, and like a lot of media organizations, probably didn't fully understand what was happening, but saw big numbers and said, well, we better get her first. And they gave you what kind of contract?
It was a 18 or 19 month development deal. And so the story goes, Carson Daly was searching on YouTube and found me. And he has Carson Daly Productions. So it was a deal with Carson Daly Productions and NBC. So that's how the story goes.
And how does that work when it's like a developmental contract? They put you in a room with writers and say, let's see how we can make this TV. Was that it?
Yeah, I wish I would have understood that better at the time. There was a lot of confusion around that. I remember they got in touch with me after I'd signed to the development deal and said, hey, E! News wants to do an interview with you on your life. But then they said, well, but what are they going to talk about? Like, what have you really done at this point? And I'm like, I don't know, but can I do it? And then they sort of decided for me that that wasn't going to happen. We had discussions about me being on Carson Daly's TV show and other things, but ultimately I just ended up doing content for their other launch, which was itsyourshowtv.com. And I was like the person, the face of that website. I think that, to be honest with you, how these development deals work is it needs to be 50-50. And I think they were kind of confused how to work with me because this was the first time that they were really signing somebody who was homegrown. And I was also confused how to work with them. Mm. So there wasn't really a mutual 50-50 exchange going on. It was like 20%, 20%, you know, we weren't fully in it.
And did it make you, like, wealthy at the time? You know, was this like a, wow, this is a, they're throwing money at me here, NBC, to fight off the competition?
They would have. In hindsight, All they wanted was for me to create content, and I could have made as much money as I wanted to. But my mind wasn't really in it. You know, money is the mind, in my opinion, right? But my heart was in it, like fully my heart was in it. And so I just couldn't really comprehend that and what it would mean for me. I was just totally blinded by my passion at that time for creating videos.
And so they, they had their new website, It's Your Show TV.org or something.
.com. Yeah.
And they said, well, this girl is popular on YouTube. Let's take her off that and put her on our website. Were you forbidden from making videos for YouTube? It had to be exclusive for their website?
No, the only really restriction was I couldn't, you know, the typical things. I couldn't wear logos, you know, certain brands and things like that. Use certain music in the content that I made for them. But I was still allowed to make my own content.
And why do you think you were valuable to them? Was it because you kind of reached that demographic that they didn't know how to reach, or that you knew how to kind of work the online space that they didn't know how to work yet as well?
Yeah, totally. I think if it wasn't me with that energy, it would have been somebody else with that energy at that time. But it just so happened that that's my destiny. That's my life story. And so it was me, you know, it was me. And so they're like, okay, this is the person who is representing this at this time as being the most subscribed on YouTube. Okay, she's it, you know?
She's the it girl.
Let's sign her.
Yeah. Where were you living at the time?
I was in Holden, Massachusetts at my mom's place still, because I had just graduated high school and I was in college. And yeah, I ended up leaving college to go and work in Hollywood and work with NBC.
Yeah, that was my next question. When you got signed, did you stay working in Massachusetts, or were you like, peace out, ma'am, I'm out of here, goodbye,
yeah,
restaurant?
I had that moment.
Yeah, you're like,
I can.
Shades on, I'm heading to Hollywood, guys.
Looking back, I wish I would have worn the shades when I told my manager at the 99 restaurant that I was leaving. I think that would have been way more cool. I was a little rude. I chose a really busy Saturday night, and I was like, yeah, I told him, I'm like, hey, Matt, I'm leaving. And he looked at me and he's like, no, you're not. I'm like, yeah, I am. I quit. I got a job with NBC and I'm going to go work with them.
You're like, I'm going to work with NBC in Hollywood. He's like, all right, take that to table number five. You're like, okay.
But I think he was just shocked. Yeah.
Did you quit that night? That was you on the spot. You quit.
Yep.
You quit, and then you went to Hollywood. So you got an apartment, and you physically actually went to Hollywood. You went to Los Angeles.
I did a little while later. I was still working remotely, and I think it was, I don't remember if I got invited by Justine or we just had the same managers, and the managers invited me to come room with Justine. And I think that's what really brought me to Los Angeles. Hi, Justine.
Yeah, there was another person we interviewed for the BBC show last year. Nice. Hi, Justine. So she went viral when she first had that massive phone bill and put it up and talked about how big the phone bill was and all that. So you went and you lived with Justine then in Los Angeles for a while.
Yeah, that was really cool. It was a couple of months and it was interesting. We were staying at our manager's mother's house. And then later on our manager's house in Encino or something like that. And it was interesting, an interesting time, an interesting way to meet Justine.
Why?
Well, because now she's so big and yeah, it's just interesting that we had chosen to meet through those managers. Because looking back, they weren't the greatest managers, I would say. They didn't really have their act together so well. And so for her, you know, this massive powerhouse, this really successful person, and I to meet in those circumstances, I just find it a little interesting. You know, we didn't meet at some conference or at some great hotel or something like that, or at a YouTube meetup or something. It was interesting.
Yeah, your manager's mother's house, the two of you staying there.
Yeah.
But you were kind of both on the same footing at that stage, because I know she is kind of the mega star now on YouTube, but you were both in kind of young, naive, kind of getting a start in this. You don't really know how Hollywood works. You're depending on these managers.
And I remember they said to me once, "You don't understand the game." And I'm like, I understand that there is a game and I don't want to play it right now. That's what I get. You know? Like, that's it. There's nothing else to say. And that's what I said to him. But they, you know, they, yeah.
And you were still, meanwhile, making videos all this time.
Yeah, I was. Not as much because I was still trying to understand where I fit in that Hollywood space. Mm. I kind of missed, in some ways, the humble beginnings, being in a quiet place like Holden, Massachusetts, and having my mother as my main audience, you know, because I have a really close relationship with my mother, and I feel like her perspective on my work was always like the most honest and challenging and deep perspective. And I think having my family as my main audience was like what made me so great, you know, because our families challenge us the most. You know, if you can relate to your family and entertain your family and make them laugh, you can make anybody laugh.
That's true. That is such a good point. So maybe you weren't built for Hollywood. Is that what you were? You think maybe looking back, or it was too much of a gear change for you in your life at that time?
I think I was meant to change Hollywood. And one of the things that I've really seen to understand it better and to share that with people, like one of the things that I've focused on and really tried to understand in these more recent years is like Andy Warhol, the artist, how he predicted that everyone would have 15 minutes of fame. And now we've pretty much been there. And now we're at TikTok status. We're at like 15 seconds of fame. And it's like the clock is ticking down to something here where like everybody gets their 15. You know, everybody. And for me, like shooting video, getting in touch with myself and seeing myself, you know, judging myself all the time, being my own toughest critic. That's what I've always kind of been doing, like when I shoot these videos. And I think, yeah, that's what a lot of people are doing, whether they realize it or not. They're editing themselves, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to understand, because you wrote that note on MySpace to your class when you were younger saying, "I'm going to be famous someday. I'm going to be big. So if you don't know me yet, you better get to know me now before it's too late, suckers." And then you got what you wanted in a way. You became the most subscribed person in the world, 60,000, which today is still a very impressive amount. But back then, 60,000 subscribers was huge. And that's why you were number one. You got the development deal from NBC. And then you found yourself in Hollywood. So you were living the dream, or maybe it was something that you had thought would be the dream for yourself.
Definitely living the dream. That's what I learned about in Hollywood from a really good actress friend of mine, Danielle Watts. She taught me all about Hollywood and how Hollywood is a dream. They create dreams, they manufacture dreams, and they sell you other people's dreams. And YouTube is about you sharing your own dream, at least getting out of Hollywood's dream and discovering what is your dream that you're projecting on the screen of your life. And then hopefully ultimately getting out of that and just being present.
So
too deep?
No, it's not too deep. It's fascinating. And I'm trying to think, does that mean that you couldn't live your own dream when you were in Hollywood? They were trying to fit you into a box, or you weren't fitting into their mold.
Yeah, and I think that's true. I never really wanted to fit into the mold, because other people's dreams are inspiring, but I always had this inherent feeling of, okay, but what's my dream? You know? Yeah. And I even did make a video, and this is what we were talking about earlier about the comedy, but also the seriousness. I recorded a video that's very popular amongst my fans called Who's in That Box? And I was just kind of riffing on this sort of song poem thing, like, who's in that box? Who, you know? And I think that that, as funny and as maniacal as it might have seemed or weird, it was more like me literally saying, like, who's not being their authentic self? Who's in that box? Like, can you step out of the box? You know? Yeah. And so I do feel, yeah, like Hollywood, I don't know. I actually, to be honest, I'm sort of equanimous about it, about Hollywood. Like, I still, especially when I was traveling in India and I wanted to be taken seriously, and I was teaching video production workshops in India to college students, more than ever, that's when my YouTube became so important to me. Because, like, in a country like India, if you have money, you're respected and people will talk to you, you know? If you don't have something, like, who are you now is so important. My Wikipedia didn't matter. Nobody cared. It was like, what am I doing now to get respect? And yeah, that's like Hollywood. And I just, like, especially when I was in India, I was like, I gotta be famous again. Like, I have to get rich again. I have to, because, like, I have a really actually important message now. And if I don't have nice clothes, nobody's gonna listen to me.
So why did you leave Hollywood and leave the good trappings that you had? And I've heard you talk about this before, the designer clothes, going to the good parties, being invited to things, meeting producers, and just having that image of your friends back home knowing, wow, Brooke, who used to work in the 99 restaurant, she's living and working in Hollywood now. Like, living.
The lucky 99.
The lucky 99. She rolled the dice totally. And she won. So why did you leave that, and why did you go to India? You kind of walked away from it all.
I was so deep into it, you know, like the PR and the managers and the first class and, like, working with Bayer Shearing, but it was sort of fading away, all of that. And then, yeah, bam, like 2012, and I had this totally out of nowhere spiritual experience, like an enlightening moment. It was just like, whoa. And then ever since then, it was just all about, what do I need? Minimalism, spirituality, Vipassana meditation, yoga, trekking the Himalayas, being triggered, you know, this whole thing, everything, all of it, listening to gurus, searching for a guru, being in India, just not having much, and that was that, you know.
I've seen this before. I've noticed the trend that it seems to happen. It happens to people everywhere, but in Hollywood, maybe because there's such a fake element to Tinseltown, that people at some point snap and they break and they go on this spiritual journey, which is why you find maybe throughout history there's been quite a lot of cults around there and people latching on to gurus, because people realize at some stage a lot of this is false and it will pass very quickly by. So they want something that's more kind of tangible and solid they can grab onto. Is that kind of something you went through?
I looked into that to try to understand that as well. But for me, the spiritual journey, I didn't go on one. It came to my doorstep. It showed up. It was just like, hello, you're ready for your journey now. Like, you don't, this is it. Like, the way YouTube showed up in my life, the spiritual journey showed up in my life. And I was like, oh, wow, this is, you know, when you live your life so authentically, you just really never know what's coming. And I planned for so many things. I've spent the last so many years, like, trying to be somebody. Like, I've intermittently been studying architecture and learning how to build with aircrete, but still it's like there's this calling, you know.
But Brooke, was it at this point then that you deleted your YouTube channel? And
in the middle of it,
you deleted your YouTube channel, which I think most of your fans, of which there were tens and tens of thousands and millions of views, you just deleted it. You got rid of it all.
Yes. Well, I started by deleting, like, one video at a time. And then it was just like one day I was like, okay, the whole thing's got to go. I've got to recycle this energy.
Why?
Because I was no longer that person. And I had to make the stage in my life for the bigger things that were coming through. And it was hard, you know, just being a totally different person and then having all these people just constantly ask questions about, you know, can you make the paste voice? Can you be Crazed Numa fan? And I was like, I'm in India right now and I have no money. And I'm on this really deep spiritual journey. I don't know what is happening here. You know, and that was just one of the bad times. There was good times too on that journey, but in the deepest of moments. And I'm like, I can't deal with both these worlds right now. Like these people who, like if you go online, it says my net worth is like $4.5 million. And people would ask me about that all the time, you know, like, oh, like especially in India, they would look me up and be like, oh, you're so rich. And after a while, I got so sick of the questions. I just started to make stuff up. I'm like, oh yeah, I was totally a millionaire. And I just was really drunk one night and in Switzerland, and I put all my money in a Swiss bank account and I forgot the details and now I'm just broke. Can you help me get into it? You know?
I went to Vegas, like, I put everything on black and we rolled and it came up red.
And now here
so
I am.
Here I am. Can I have a bit of your sandwich?
But yeah, I don't know why the internet is saying that. It's like, no, but anyway.
But isn't that such a weird juxtaposition? Because there you are in India, of course, where India is such a vast country. Don't want to generalize, but of course, like so many impoverished areas of which I'm sure you were in. And you've got these notifications coming up from your other life in Los Angeles, from your stardom. It won't let you go. It won't leave you. You're being reminded all the time of the star you are back on the internet in
Which
Hollywood.
Which is a blessing, ultimately. Such a blessing.
But you realize that now, but at the time you said you couldn't deal with both these worlds.
I couldn't deal with it, but so that was a different time. That was at that time, yeah, I couldn't deal with it. But then once I deleted it, I'd realize what a mistake I made.
Ah.
And I was like, oh man, you know, that would have looked so good if I could have pulled that up and showed these people around me, like, look, I've got 60,000 subscribers, like I'm famous in the USA. See, I went really deep in India. I became so like, yeah, I don't know. I really could have used that leverage to be like, look, I'm really somebody. I'm really somebody. Please respect me.
But is that an insecurity or is that a wanting to be liked? Because I'm just thinking back to what you were saying there, that you were a different person now and you didn't want to be doing that dance and putting on that voice anymore for people. So these people who you meet in the town or the village in India, well, why
it was
did
mainly
you...
my gr- it was mainly my group of friends. I have a large group of friends over there in the music and art scene.
Ah, okay.
And it was them and a lot of people that I was trying to impress, you know, my ego and
ego, because it's a hard transition to make when you go from being on the top and you know you've lived that life and got the deal with NBC, but they don't know that around you. And then if you delete the channel, you've nothing to show them. You can't say, oh, look at this, guys. And so did you find that difficult, the transition from top to bottom?
Actually, I kind of wished it was difficult because I realized, like, once I deleted it, that it didn't actually really change anything at all. Like, I was hoping to get more attention or something to happen when I did that, but nothing really happened. Because, like I said, all my friends over there, they're so present and they're so now. It's not about what you did. Like, what are you doing right now? That's all they cared about.
So what about your fans who were watching your videos and you disappear all of a sudden, and the ones who grew up watching you from the early days of YouTube? I know, were there rumors going around that Brooke has had a breakdown, Brooke this, and like what did they think?
I think I just disappeared. That's like on my channel now, which is Oral Vlog. That's my YouTube name now. I was surprised by what they were saying. They were saying like, oh, I just couldn't find you. I'm like, what? I didn't, like, I put my name on my new YouTube channel and stuff, like, that wasn't enough. Like, no, I guess I needed to make a video on the YouTube, on my Brooker's channel, saying I was leaving. But, you know, in a way, I didn't want to do that because there were a lot of people there who I just felt weren't really serious about my content. They were just still stuck in the hype. And I still am trying to create a really real community of people. And I think actually of the 822 or more, 890 something people that are subscribed to my channel now, I feel like each of them, they're so into it. You know, I post a video and within a few hours, almost all of those 800 something people are watching. And so I think deleting the old channel was actually getting rid of a lot of subscribers that probably weren't watching anyway. Maybe old channels that no longer were active that were still subscribed. And so getting this new channel and just kind of getting away from the old one really showed like who's really there, enjoying the content, wanting to get to know me, ready for the next step. You know,
I saw you say once in one of your new YouTube videos, you were saying that you would not advise people to be the character you were or to act as you did, which is kind of, I think, the style of many young YouTubers now. It's high energy, high octane, kind of go, go, go. Even YouTubers now, when they're filming themselves, they want to make it so high energy, they cut. I don't know if you've noticed that. When they're talking to camera and they're saying a sentence, they will cut the gaps between each word so that it jumps. So just moving faster, more high energy, more jump cuts. When you look back at the videos you were making when you were younger, why do you think you wouldn't recommend people to make videos like that or to act like that?
I think in a lot of videos, to just be honest about it, I think I was just on a sugar high. Complete and utter sugar high. Just burning myself out. And I remember a lot of the YouTubers that I used to hang out with doing the same thing. We went to the Grove, and I don't remember who it was, me and Justine and a group of other YouTubers, and he poured like 10 packets of sugar in his coffee. I mean, who's to say? Like, when I'm in the West, the health journey is so important. When I'm in the East, it just doesn't seem to matter. They're all drinking tea with tons of sugar in it. But, I think that deep down, I wasn't super happy with myself at that time. And I think I was just looking for attention, or I was just a youth who was full of energy. And I feel like I could have had a little more direction.
What direction would you give to yourself if you could talk to your 18, 19-year-old Brooke yourself?
Your heart is really strong and powerful. Your passion is ridiculous. You can do anything you want in the world, but please just learn something and get some focus. And don't let that heart take control of everything you do, because it's not the smartest. You know, it'll just lead you off a cliff. Like, it's if it wanted to, it can't see. You know, it's just like blinded by passion. That's the heart, right? So I would have said that to myself, like, study something, you'll be great.
So you didn't restart your YouTube channel. You started a new YouTube channel, and you were uploading kind of travel little snippets and fun bits from your travels in different places. And what's the aim of the channel now? What kind of videos are you trying to make, or what's the kind of message you want to get across by having a channel?
Interestingly, since I've become a mother, a lot of like my childish energy has come back, and I've actually posted a couple of funny videos, which is refreshing even for me, and I'm sure for a lot of people who've been watching. And so the goal is really like how to take all of this spirituality, this journey, everything that's so heavy, and translate it into something, you know, not JP status. I don't know if you've ever seen JP, that spiritual guy who makes funny spiritual videos on YouTube. Not something that's mocking it, but just Yeah, something great. I don't know. We'll see what comes out of it. Oro Vlog, that channel, originally I created it to do daily video blogs in Oroville. But that didn't happen. So yeah, it had a spiritual foundation to it. But I think it's sort of just like a launch pad right now for something, you know, something more aligned.
When you look back at Hollywood, I've heard you mention this a few times before, feeling disillusioned about Hollywood and the game, as you put it. You know, when you went there, I'm sure the managers were saying, you know, we're going to look out for you, Brooke, and we're anything you want, just ask us and we're here for you. When you decided to kind of pack the bags and leave Hollywood behind you and delete the channel, was that it? Was Hollywood kind of like, next? Or did you stay in touch with people where they're like, okay, if you want to come back and try things again, you know, we can work with you again?
No, it was almost like I was just speaking a different language and they just kind of vanished from my life. And the one person who actually had anything to do with me at that time, and I think it's because Steve Jobs was her mentor, was I, Justine. And she met me at a cafe and she gave me some tools, you know, when I didn't really have much. And I was like, wow, she's a legitimately good person. You know, she's someone that I'll keep around. She's someone that I will be there for always if she needs something, you know? So, yeah, it was more like Hollywood just kind of... Hollywood? Oh, man. I don't know. I'll never be done with Hollywood. Like I said, I'm equanimous about it, you know? I'm equanimous about it. I don't like it or dislike it. If things become more interesting or change with Hollywood, that would be great. And it is changing. Hollywood's changing. For sure, it's changing. I answered your question.
No, you did. No, and I'm fascinated by everything you're saying. And there's so many tangents we could be going down because everything is so complex and layered, you know? Mm. And the thing I was wondering, because I watched your video, and I think people should go watch it, where you talk about going from 60,000 subscribers to then I think it was like 300 subscribers. Mm-hmm. And you were saying how difficult you found that because you thought that those 60,000 subscribers would come and look for you. And even there you mentioned maybe you deleted it as a way to make a splash and everyone would be like, where is she? What's going on? Big, you know, kind of online news. And then they would find you in your new channel.
Yeah, I did think that. Yeah, that might happen. Yeah.
But were you surprised when you saw, wait, like the machine moves on, they're not coming to find me in my new home?
That was a surprise. Yeah, I knew that when I deleted, like I said, I knew that when I deleted that YouTube, a lot of people who weren't still watching. So I had 60,000 subscribers, but I was only getting like 5,000 views or something total on most of the videos. So I'm like, a lot of these people are like old channels. I've just gotta like get rid of that because it's not true. And it was... the fact that it wasn't true, I was getting a lot of like, not annoying, but emails coming in from brands who wanted to work with me just because of that number. Mm. But that number was no longer actually who was watching me. It was just like it was just bait for advertisers. But there was nothing out there. It wasn't truth.
By the way, we hear your bambino there in the background. I say bambino because I mean, that's a nice thing. It's a beautiful thing. Tell us what age your bambino is and if they're healthy and happy.
Yeah, she's totally healthy and happy. She's 9.5 months old and she's getting ready to crawl. And she's walking a bit as well.
Isn't that the most important thing?
Yeah, for sure.
When I was watching some of your videos now, and it was really cool because you could see, as you said, the new evolution of Brooke, but you could see glimpses of the old kind of just nonsensical fun videos, like when you were with your partner, you were up at the window of the house pretending to be at a drive-thru, ordering a drink, and he was like telling you to go away and that you were the manager. Yeah. And you were like, no, you're the manager. And then you went inside and you had to make it yourself. And it just reminded me so much of your old videos. Just like it was just kind of nonsensical and fun. And it's kind of nice to mix those two worlds. So it's a lot of work, isn't it? You've talked about how you realize now in today's day and age, running a YouTube channel is a lot more work than it used to be. How are you finding that?
Yeah, I definitely dove into that because when I used to do things organically or like the first time I got famous, it was so easy. It was just fun. Everything was fun. It was like awesome. It was effortless. It was super aligned. And then when I had to take a step back and like actually work for things, nothing worked out really the way that I wanted it to. It was super difficult. It took a lot of energy. That's the thing. It's like, it's work. It's work.
Brooke, what would you say to somebody watching this who is like so many young people are today? They aspire to be a YouTube star, the next TikTok or Instagram sensation influencer. You know, you were there. You had that life, the most subscribed person in the world with a deal in Hollywood. You left it all behind you, went to India, and now you're back putting your toes in it again. You've learned a lot along that journey, good things and bad things. What would you say to them?
Keep your eyes and ears peeled because what's coming next, you're gonna love it. And if you're young, you probably already know what's coming next because you're making it happen. And don't forget to breathe.
You're awesome, Brooke. And I even love your headphones, your big, massive Formula One NASA headphones microphone.
Is Elon Musk available? Hello, hello. We've got some rockets to land. Are you landing them properly yet?
We launch in 5, 4, 4. 3, 2, 1.
One.
Lift off.
Ooh, nice.
Now we go live.
That was cool.
Did you like that? Now we go live to Brooke.
That was super cool.
And you need to get one of these machines where just on demand, you can do this.
Whoa.
I'm in a cave and you can also do this. Hey, my voice is really high and squeaky.
Ooh. Oh, you can have a down mic. We don't have that. We don't have all that.
I know. This is...
Oh, man. I want to ask you, like, please go through all of them, but I know we're limited.
There's like 24. Time. Each one, they're like, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Brooke, hey, we're so good talking to you. And, yeah, I hope everything is... I know everything is going to work out great. You've got a great partner there. You've a newborn, beautiful child who's healthy and happy. You're back on YouTube reconnecting with some of those people who were really kind of in it for the right reasons at the early days. And, you know, you went from 300 now up to nearly 900 subscribers. That's like, you know, you've tripled it. And it's going to keep growing. And it's going to be so interesting to see what you do with your platform and the message you convey and the wisdom you impart on people.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited too.
So what's it like being an internet celebrity? I don't really know.